We start our second hour. Welcome back. What's going on? Or a tremendous morning to you. I am Jim Rome. I'm live in Southern California, and we are coming to you from the Quicken Loans studios. Quicken Loans, apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. Busy second hour. I've got Chris Mannix coming up in 15 minutes. Tim Layden coming up at 40 past. We'll talk Triple Crown with him. Third hour is open, but you can get in this segment if you call right now. 1-800-636-8686. Another amazing thing this morning, Major Leaguer Mark Melancon not only tweeted at me, but Mark Melancon also tweeted that James Kelly coached him as he was growing up. So the squatter, the legend of the squatter, continues to grow right alongside his enormous forehead. This guy coached a three-time All-Star. This guy coached a reliever of the year. And by the way, squatter, how the hell do I not know that story? I had to hear about it from Melancon himself on Twitter. The flight deck is amazing. What else do we need to know, flight deck, that we don't know right now? Other breaking bit of news this morning, a valued member of the XR4TI is moving on. He leaves us today. I have not told you who that is, but I'm asking you, who do you think it is? And again, do not confuse who you want it to be. If I were to ask you who you want it to be, Hawk wins in a landslide. Who you want it to be may or may not be who it actually is. So take your shot. 1-800-636-8686. In terms of the flight deck, this email reads, Rome, Kelly coached kids how to lift your massive helmet with your legs and not your back. Damasio in Albuquerque.
Snyder.
All right, so T.O. announced, Terrell Owens, that he's not going to attend the induction ceremony for the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2018 later on this summer. He tweeted a statement which read in part, and I quote, "While I'm incredibly appreciative of this opportunity, I made the decision to publicly decline my invitation to attend the induction ceremony in Canton. After visiting Canton earlier this year, I came to the realization that I wish to celebrate what will be one of the most memorable days of my life elsewhere." End quote. All right. Okay. Whatever, if you say so. Wait, you went to Canton. And then you realize that you don't want to be in Canton for when you go into Canton. Because that makes a lot of sense. Look, I understand that Canton might not be the coolest city ever. But what was it about your trip to the Hall of Fame that made you think, I don't want to be at the Hall of Fame when I go into the Hall of Fame? Look, I wish I could say that this thing surprises me, but it doesn't. Nor will I be surprised when somebody talks him into going and he suddenly shows up day of. Because that's who T.O. is. That's who this dude is. This is how he rolls. How else is T.O. going to get attention for T.O. from now until the induction ceremony? I mean, knowing him, I would have been surprised if there wasn't a story like this. Surprised if he had just said, this is the best thing ever. It's going to be my best day ever. I can't wait to get to Canton. I am, however, shocked that he's turning down a chance to talk about himself for an extended period of time. I mean, that ceremony is all about guys talking about themselves, and they let you go almost for as long as you want. That right there is right in T.O.'s wheelhouse. He's better at that than catching footballs, and he was pretty damn good at catching footballs. I mean, he'd be up there talking, and there's nothing anybody can do to stop him. The next time he turns down an opportunity like that is certainly going to be the first. Listen, I don't know what this is about, and honestly, I really don't care. Even if what it's really about is T.O. getting more attention for T.O. I mean, was he personally hurt by the fact that it took too long for him to get voted in? Longer than it should have? Maybe. Possibly. Probably. I just know that I don't care. Nor do I care if he's there or not. Just know this, too. The ceremony really is the thing. Understand this. That's when you give your speech. That's when you get your jacket. That's when you see your bust. That's your day. After that, you're just one of a few hundred guys in a building in Canton, Ohio. Don't get me wrong. It's an amazing honor, and you deserve it. But the day is the thing. The day is the day. And celebrating that day somewhere else is just weird, even for you. again. Maybe he's still wounded from the snub. Maybe getting in hasn't healed that pain yet. But here's the thing. You want to talk about a guy who handled a Hall of Fame snub with class. Not everybody gets in when they want to get in or when they think they'll get in. Others have been snubbed. This is not the way to handle it, too. But I'll tell you who did handle it the right way. I give you Andre Rison. Hell yes, I'm talking about Spider-Man. When he was asked about his legacy in 2009, you know how I'm not a legacy guy? I am as it relates to this guy. When he was asked about his legacy back in 2009, Andre Rison, Hawk, wake up. Have you heard of Andre Rison? No, you have not. There's no way you have. Rison told the Atlanta Journal-Constitution back in 2009 when asked about his legacy, quote, best receiver to ever play the game. I can't show my highlights because I don't own NFL films. But all my coaches in college, in high school, in junior college, they all told me I could be the best. But they must have lied because that title was already given to Jerry Rice. Just because you have stats doesn't mean you're the best. Can't nobody tell me that Andre Reed isn't better than Jerry Rice? I'm seeing cornerbacks on the 75th anniversary team that I used to demolish, but I'm coming out with my own Hall of Fame. End of quote. That's how you handle that. If they don't let you in, you just start your own. You won't let me into the Hall of Fame? I'll make my own Hall of Fame. Now, that's how a legend responds to a challenge. And you can laugh at that quote all you want, but that to me is a Hall of Fame quote. That quote itself should get its own wing in the Andre Rison Hall of Fame because it is greatness from the beginning right up until the end, starting with best receiver to ever play the game. Bam! Have some, all of you. And then he chases that with a discussion of why he can't show you his highlights. Quote, because I don't own NFL films. Man, I'll tell you what I think. I hope that means that in the so-called Andre Rison Hall of Fame, the highlights that they show are like the photos that they have in football players and TV ads. You know, because those TV ads also do not own NFL films. You know, just football players and ads, generic guys wearing generic uniforms, no logos, no mascots. Just Andre Rison wearing a white jersey and a black helmet, taking on a team wearing a green jersey and a green helmet. That's how you handle that. That's quality. And no, losers. The Andre Rison Hall of Fame was not burned down by Left Eye. Yes. Knock it the hell off. Keep it classy, because that's what the Andre Rison Hall of Fame is all about. Class. T.O., you could learn a thing or two from A.R., because I guarantee Andre Rison did not bail on Andre Rison's induction into the Andre Rison Hall of Fame.
Get your popcorn ready.
T.O., you'll be there, and you should be there. You earned it. You're a Hall of Famer. Show up like everybody else. And not because it's the right thing to do, but you don't want to miss that. The day is the thing. The induction is the thing. After that, you're one of a few hundred with that hideous mustard jacket. The day is the thing. You'll be there. You know you will. We know you will. Get! 1-800-636-8686. Jerry Kramer, and we can get into the nuts and bolts about who's a better player, who's more deserving. I know this. My man Jerry Kramer didn't wait 3 years like you did. He waited four decades. I know, different situation, different guys, different careers, different players. You both deserve to be in. But my man Jerry Kramer's going happily. I think T.O. will be there. He's got to be there. You're not going to miss your induction ceremony. Come on. Let's go quickly to the phones. I've got Chris Mannix coming up next segment. Tim Layden coming up right after that. Let's go to San Diego. James in San Diego. What's going on, James? How are you?
I'm doing well. First time in the jungle room. Thanks so much for the Vine.
Right on. You got it.
I just want to offer a straight take on the NHL finals. I'm not a fan of either team. I'm an Islander fan. I had no really dog in the fight, but I was just happy to finally see Ovi and the Caps after so many years of ineptitude win it. I feel like Vegas going as far as they did really accomplished so much. And even if they didn't get the Stanley Cup, it's still a story that will never be forgotten. So the more important thing, at least for me as a casual fan, was seeing Ovi and the Caps win. It's just so very different to see the different cultures in the cities that won. I mean, if Vegas won, they'd be on floats going down the strip with hookers and blow right now, and then D.C.'s got to file the permits to even have a party while the powers that be in D.C. are trying to give pardons.
That was tough, James. Hey, listen, I get caught myself sometimes where something doesn't come out the way I want it to, and then I'll kind of double clutch and try and get it back. But after you double clutch and then you hit it a third time and a fourth time, it ain't coming out. So, my man, I had to put you out of your misery. Sorry about that. You'll thank me later. As far as the point that I don't have a dog in this fight, I really don't care who wins. I'm just glad that it went down in Vegas, because that way, if the Golden Knights had won, they could have gone down the strip with, quote, hookers and blow. But in the district, you need to get a permit for hookers and blow. Maybe you don't need the permit for, quote, hookers in Vegas, but I'm pretty sure you do need a permit for blow. What with it not being legal and all. The district got theirs, and I'm happy for Ovi, too. He's had a rap as being a great, great player, a Hall of Famer, but a guy who just never got it done on the big stage, a guy that you can never count on in the postseason, a guy who went into the tank. Nobody can ever say that about Ovi anymore. Not only does he get his name on the cup, but he's as big a reason as any of them for getting his name on the cup. He had a huge, huge postseason. I'm trying to figure out exactly what that guy got stuck on. James in San Diego. What happened there, Albie?
To even have a party while the powers that be in D.C. are trying to give pardons.
You know, you might have come out of that. The powers that be in D.C. Giving pardon. Is that what you're reaching for? Hey, James, don't sweat it, man. Don't take it personally. It could happen to any of us. Except it did happen to you. It's all right. Call back next week or the week after. It was a good call. Right up until you wanted to reference the powers that be in D.C. Save that call. I'm going to rack him. When we come back, we go back-to-back. Chris Mannix first, and then Tim Layden right after that. And then our third hour is wide open. Still ahead. I'm going to find out whether or not the squatter coached any other major leaguers or NFLers that I do not know about. Also still ahead, one of our valued members of the family is moving on. And I have not given up who that is. Take your shot. Guess. Falling into bed has taken on a whole new meaning. Ever since I started sleeping on my Casper mattress, their engineers have created an amazingly comfortable sleep experience. Get one and you will understand why it's the internet's favorite mattress. Casper has created three unique mattresses to help you sleep cool and comfortably year-round. The Wave is engineered to relieve pressure at 36 different points. Then you have the Casper mattress, more breathable and comfortable than ever. The Essential mattress is innovation at a great price point. All of those mattresses are designed to coddle and comfort your every move, and they all provide the perfect support for every position that you sleep in. Find out why Casper has hundreds of thousands of happy customers like me. Try yours for 100 nights in your own home with free shipping and returns. Go to Casper.com, use the code ROME, get $50 off the purchase of certain mattresses. Casper.com, code name ROME, save $50. Terms and conditions do apply. You want to see the site for details.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Busy second hour. Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. Coming up at 40 past, we talk the Belmont Stakes with Tim Layden. And that's coming up in about 20 minutes. If you're on hold, stay there. Right now, we are joined by a senior writer for Yahoo Sports. He covers the NBA and boxing. An NBA analyst for NBC Sports Boston. Host of the Yahoo Sports NBA podcast. He is everywhere and specifically in Cleveland right now. We are joined by Chris Mannix. Chris, what's going on, bud? How are you?
What's happening, Jim?
What's up, man? How are you?
Oh, just...
fried.
Enjoying Cleveland for maybe the last time. You know, we never know what's going to happen this summer, but this could be the last time we're spending a June in Cleveland.
Well, that is well said. I'm going to pick that up in 1 minute, Chris. But before I do that, let me ask you about the 76ers parting ways with Brian Colangelo yesterday. Based on everything Chris had come out, was there any way that this was going to end any other way than it just did?
No, in the 48 hours that preceded the announcement that Colangelo was gone, but what I was told was that it was simply a matter of semantics, whether it would be a resignation, a firing. There's a lot of money involved, of course, because Brian Colangelo still has a contract. But there was a pretty solid resolve within some key people, the key people in the organization, that it just couldn't go on. Now, a lot of people, Jim, have said that, you know, how do you, Colangelo being there would affect their pursuit of free agents. Internally, the thinking in Philadelphia was more, how does his presence affect the guys we still have on the roster? Because clearly, you know, the relationship with Markelle Fultz was fractured. I mean, all the stuff being that was out there, put out there about Fultz, they didn't know how they could go back on that. The stuff about Embiid and Simmons to a lesser degree, but, you know, when you put medical information or inside information out on the internet, whether it's Colangelo or his wife, that was just kind of a point where that was the point of no return, I think, for Philadelphia. So this was, you know, a happening, you know, I think Monday or Tuesday, and it was just a matter of the language.
We're talking to Chris Mannix. All right, so what about this? Colangelo's wife admitted that she established and operated those accounts. Do you think that front office executives around the league are going to change how they approach their work and talk about their work with their friends and family after an incident like this? Is there going to be any kind of change?
Yeah, I've talked to a few GMs about that. The answer usually is no. I mean, they look at it like, well, I can't imagine my wife ever doing that, and I can't imagine, you know, like my kids or whatever ever doing that. I mean, certainly there's a heightened awareness to it, and I'm sure this topic and this story comes up around the dinner table as a cautionary tale, but I don't think there's going to be any more emphasis placed, you know, by GMs on what they say to their family members. It's just it just creates too weird of a home environment. It certainly is a bizarre story, but not one that I get the sense that other league executives believe is going to be duplicated in their household.
Chris Mannix joining us. All right, so let me go back to the point that you made at the very top. You've got game four of the finals tonight. It could potentially be the end of LeBron's time in Cleveland. How do you think that game goes tonight?
I don't think that the Cavs win. I mean, people have pointed out that the Cavs won, a game four last year when they were down 3-0, but that was with Kyrie Irving. And Kyrie Irving, I'm pretty sure, went bonkers in that game, and you know, they had a great first half. I just don't see the same type of resolve within this team. I mean, you listen to LeBron's comments in the last couple of days, and you know, I don't want to say he's checked out because I don't think he is, but you know, he's talking and he's answering questions about it, but he's talking about what he's looking for, you know, in teammates, and there's a lot of references to, you know, to what happens next. I just don't think that – I think this Cavs team understands that they're hopelessly undermanned, and they knew that coming into this series, that this was going to be an uphill battle, but I don't get the same sense that there's this kind of steely resolve to extend this series and push it back to Oakland like they need to have. I think we end it tonight.
Right, and the other thing he was talking about in the last 24 hours is basketball IQ and how important it is that Golden State's got it. You have to match it or surpass it. Chris, what do you think is going to be the driving force in his decision-making over the next month or so?
Chance to win. I mean, that's just it. I mean, if you look at LeBron's history, and nobody really knows what he's thinking. I mean, you know, people can speculate Houston, Philadelphia, all that stuff in L.A. You know, you can connect a lot of dots, but you know he's a very cerebral guy. He's thinking something. I just don't think anybody knows it. But chance to win is what you can always trace it back to, right? I mean, you go back to 2010. He left Cleveland, a 60-plus win team, to go to Miami, which was built to win multiple championships. He left Miami in 2014 to go to Cleveland, which at that time, with Kyrie and Kevin Love in his mid-20s, was equipped not just to win right away, but to win for the next 7, 8, 9 years, which I think was what LeBron originally envisioned with that group. Wherever he goes is going to give him a better chance to win immediately than what he has right now in Cleveland. That's only a handful of teams, but it's always going to be predicated on having a chance to win championships.
Chris Mannix is my guest. Like you said, we don't really know. He might not even know at this point, but as you look at the landscape, is there a team in a situation out there that makes obvious sense for LeBron?
I still think Houston makes obvious sense. You know, he's going to get recruited pretty hard. He probably already is. I mean, come September, we could have a conversation, Jim, about how, oh, wow, I mean, Chris Paul all postseason long was DMing or texting or, you know, whatevering, you know, LeBron talking about coming to Houston, or James Harden was doing the same thing. Those guys in the next few weeks are going to be aggressively going after LeBron James. They can taste it down there in Houston. I mean, they know that Chris doesn't get injured, you know, in Game 5. They're probably in the finals right now with a chance to win a championship, and they know they're on the cusp. And if it's just a matter of salary cap gymnastics, of moving a Ryan Anderson or letting go of an Eric Gordon, they'll get it done down there in Houston to get LeBron. So I think the combination of the recruitment of guys that LeBron is close with and Houston's status as a real contender is going to be very appealing to LeBron.
Chris Mannix joins me for a couple of more moments. Chris, what about Golden State? Let me bounce back to that for a minute. Winning Game 3 was significant for the Warriors, obviously, but from a psychological standpoint, how important was it for Kevin Durant to have the game that he had in Game 3?
I don't know that it's important for Durant. I mean, Durant is in so much of a better place right now than he was last year. Last year, you could, you know, kind of feel the insecurity on him. I mean, he's so, and we saw this at the start of the season, but he's so aware, as a heightened awareness of what people are saying about him and the criticism about him, the bandwagon jumping stuff. That's all gone now. I mean, Kevin Durant is not, you know, along for the ride in Golden State. He's the reason that Golden State is in the position they're in. Take Kevin Durant off this team the last couple of years, Jim. They're probably not a championship team last year. I don't think they beat Cleveland last year without Kevin Durant. Take him off this year's team, they're probably beat in the conference finals. He is now, you know, the driving force behind this team. So, you know, when he has games like he had in Game 3, it's impressive. I just don't think it matters to him as much as it might have mattered last year.
You know that point, Chris, that he's the driving force behind that team. Like, when LeBron went to Miami, the question was, whose team is it going to be? And it became LeBron's. When you look at Golden State, whose team is it? I mean, when you say he's the driving force, is it Durant's team, or do you have a couple of guys driving that bus?
I think it's Durant's team now, and the comparison you made with Miami and them, it's apt, because you know, Miami only became great when Dwayne Wade said, look, I know I've been here forever, I'm the face of this franchise, but it's now LeBron's team. Like, this is his team. And you go back to 2011 and 2012 when they first won a championship, that's part of the reason they were able to do that, because they were more comfortable in their roles, in part because Dwayne Wade kind of ceded that responsibility. An underappreciated part of what Steph Curry's done these last couple of years is cede that. I mean, it's easy for us to say, well, of course you want to bring a guy onto a team and you can win championships. But for a two-time MVP to say, all right, I'm going to, you know, basically not win MVP awards anymore, and I'm going to let this guy, you know, kind of be the de facto leader of this team, that takes a lot. I mean, not a lot of guys in this league have the ego to or the lack of ego to be willing to go and do that. So, you know, the mindset of these players in allowing Durant to be Durant and him to come in and take on the role that he has, that's been a big reason they're here right now.
All right, so a quick follow. What does Golden State look like to you next season? I mean, they're on the verge of 3 titles in 4 years. Does it feel like they're near the end of the run, or are they closer to the middle of the run?
Yeah, I think they're in the middle. You know, you talk to people in the Warriors organization, they're going to place a priority on revamping that bench. They've got some older pieces there, David West, Sean Livingston, some young guys that maybe can play. It looks like Jordan Bell can play, and they're pretty high on Patrick McCaw, but they're going to revamp that bench because they're thinner this year than they've ever been. I mean, Steve Kerr's talked about it, and you can see the results. They play their starters a lot more minutes than they want to. So, you know, all those guys are going to be back. I mean, they're all in their prime and playing at a high level. So all they need to do now is to tweak that bench, bring in some versatile guys, some good role players, and I think they're going to be, you know, the favorite or co-favorite for the next 2 or 3 years.
He is a senior writer for Yahoo Sports. He covers the NBA and boxing, an NBA analyst for NBC Sports Boston, and host of the Yahoo Sports NBA podcast. My man Chris Mannix. Chris, thank you so much. You're the best. I really appreciate it.
Always good to talk to you, Jim.
You too, bud. Have a great day. He's grinding. I respect the grind. He's getting a lot of things done. When we return, I mentioned we'd go back-to-back. You've got the opportunity for a Triple Crown winner once again, the Belmont Stakes, coming up this weekend. Justify is going to try and lock that thing down. Tim Layden, excellent, excellent writer on all things. He's coming up next. Third hour is a really important hour for a number of reasons, including our bidding farewell to a member of the XR4TI. That's coming up, and I've got some thoughts on the Hall of Fame and plenty of time for your phone calls. All coming up in the third hour, but right now, it's time for a sports update. Here's the latest.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
The Belmont Stakes is tomorrow. Tim Layton joins me momentarily to break that down. Quick thought, though. Before you hit the road for any vacation this summer, you want to check out GNC Clones. Where else would you go for energy products, sports nutrition, or vitamins? Of course, GNC. I hit it all the time. GNC has the highest quality solutions and supplements in the industry. GNC brand products pass up to 150 quality checks. You can be sure you're getting the best prices with GNC's price match guarantee as well. GNC does not just match prices, they will beat them by a buck. Or try something new. If it's not right for you, return it for a full refund. This summer, live well with GNC. Exclusions do apply. See an associate or GNC.com for details. Once again, GNC, GNC.com. All right, as promised, we're joined right now by a senior writer for Sports Illustrated, an NBC Sports essayist. 150th Belmont Stakes is tomorrow. That's a huge race every year regardless, but even bigger tomorrow, we are joined by Tim Layton. Tim, it's so good to have you back. Good morning. How are you?
Good, Jim. Good.
Good.
Ready for the race.
Good. I am too. So we're about 24 hours out from the 150th running of the Belmont Stakes. Yet again, Tim, we've got to look at a triple crown. My first question, how different is the feeling and the vibe around the track when it comes to Justify's attempt as opposed to American Pharoah, who arrived at the Belmont 3 years ago?
You know, it's been an interesting week to be here, and I think a lot of us saw this coming in racing, is that, you know, you can't duplicate a 37-year drought without something happening. You know, I liken it to the Red Sox going 86 years and then winning in 2004. You know, the next one they won in 07 was great, but not as big. And it's just, you know, it's a really big thing, Jim, if Justify wins this. It will only be the 13th time ever. But, you know, the buzz is not exactly the same because people have seen it now and the sport doesn't have this desperation to pull it off again. So I think that that's something that's in the air here, and you can't really change it. And I think, you know, it'll get more exciting as we get closer to the race, but you just can't manufacture that kind of rare piece of history.
Tim Layton is my guest. Now, Tim, as you've written, so many horses have tried and failed to win the third leg of the Triple Crown, and the gap between Triple Crown winners became so big that there was this notion of changing the length of the races and the amount of time between the races. In a way, then, did the story of not winning the Triple Crown almost become bigger than winning the Triple Crown?
Jim, I didn't hear your question. I'm sorry. I'm in a tough spot at the track right now.
No, I hear you. I can hear it in the background. I was saying, Tim, that because it was so long between winners of the Triple Crown, there was actual talk about maybe changing things up, making the races a little bit different in terms of length and the amount of time between the races. So what I'm getting at is, did the story of not winning the Triple Crown almost become bigger than actually winning the Triple Crown?
Well, I think so. I mean, because it allowed that anticipation to build year after year after year. I mean, a lot of us that covered it got sick of walking out of here with some horse winning the belt, the Derby and Preakness, and then getting denied in the Belmont. And it got old after a while. But then when the next one came around, there was this, you know, I'm sure you felt it once you got into the game too, that, you know, there was this anticipation, you know, is this horse the one? You know, is Smarty Jones the one? Is Big Brown the one? Is I'll Have Another the one? And, you know, California Chrome, there was huge enthusiasm for that horse. And then finally American Pharoah. You know, I think there was great relief and excitement when it happened, but then at the same time, you know, there wasn't. Then the next time it's come around, now it's like, okay, what's the storyline other than, you know, can this great horse win the Triple Crown? Which is a huge storyline, but it's not as big as the one we used to have.
No, it really is, Tim. And which brings me to my next question. I mean, you never know where that next monster is coming from, where that next superstar is coming from. I mean, it's neither here nor there, I guess, but could you make the argument that if Justify came along maybe 10 years after American Pharoah, would that not have been better for the sport?
Yeah, it's so risky to say it would have been better for the sport, but it definitely, you know, as a guy who's out here to write about it and tell stories about it, you know, I could have used another few years, you know, just to let the, you know, you just, the one thing you don't want is people that aren't really familiar with the game to have this happen and say, okay, now that's twice in 4 years. I guess it's not that big a deal anymore. When it's still a huge deal. It was a huge deal when it happened three times in the 70s, which is a long time ago, but, you know, not all those horses were tremendously respected for what they did, even though it happened three times. And, you know, a few more years would have been great. But Jim, I'll say one thing, you know, in terms of the race itself, Josefi looks so good that if he were to win by some huge margin, some massive daylight, that might change the things. That might change things a little bit too.
Tim Layden is joining us. I think that's a point that's well taken. Now, when you look at him, Tim, as a horse, Josefi, what do you see, and what are the qualities of that animal that impress you the most?
The thing is, he's, you know, like American Pharoah was like sort of like lean and athletic. You know, he only weighed 1,150 pounds, which isn't a ton for a top-level racehorse. Josefi weighs 120 pounds more than that, and he's just hugely muscled in all the places that, you know, a great racehorse would be muscular. But he's so big that when Baffert and those guys first saw him, they thought, well, this is a tremendous animal with great speed, but he's not going to be able to run very far. And then what it turned out is when he started training and started racing, he didn't stop. So what he is kind of this freaky combination of speed and strength, but he can also keep going. And we're going to find out tomorrow if he can keep going a whole mile and a half, but you know, a mile and a quarter at the Derby did not look like a problem. And he's just too big and too strong to be able to go this far. And, you know, when you look at him on the track, he just doesn't look like all the other horses out there training or racing. And, you know, when I was with Baffert, he just compared Pharoah to Michael Jordan and Josefi to LeBron James in terms of the way they look and behave and in terms of their athletic skill set, you know. And, you know, it's horses aren't humans, but if you want something to use, that you can go with that.
You know, I was going to say exactly the same thing. You beat me to it. He's like LeBron. He looks like LeBron. He's got that kind of build and that size. I don't know, Tim. I mean, we'll find out, right? I'm not sure he's a mile-and-a-half horse, but that takes nothing away from the horse. He's unbelievable. That's an amazing horse. We'll find out if he gets the mile-and-a-half. Let me ask you about the rider. Tim Layden's my guest. You had a great piece earlier this week about my guy Mike Smith and his road to this point. Even people who don't know racing that well know Mike Smith's name, and they know the legend he is. But Tim, you went back to 2002 when he was 37 and he was still trying to rebuild himself and his career after a brutal crash in 98 that left him with a couple of fractured vertebrae. How would you describe where Mike was in his career back in 02?
You know, he was at a point where, you know, the way that works for jockeys in this game, and again, Jim, you know this, they spend a small part of their time riding horses in races in the afternoon and a big part of their time going out to the track in the morning with their agents trying to drum up business, trying to get the best trainers to put them on the best horses, because nobody can win a bunch of races on a bad horse. And in 2002, Bob Baffert put Mike Smith on a horse named Vindication, who won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. It looked like he might win the Kentucky Derby the next year. And then Bob Baffert took him off and put Jerry Bailey on the horse. And he told Mike Smith at the time, "I'll make it up to you someday." And he's put him on good horses since then, Bodemeister, Painter, but they've had, their relationship has gone up and down. And finally he put him on Arrowgate in 2016. It was a great, great horse. And when he was looking for somebody to put on Josefi this spring, he decided to put Mike Smith on him because he wanted somebody that he could trust and that he knew wouldn't make big mistakes under pressure. And after the Derby, he told Mike Smith, he asked him if he remembered Vindication, and Mike nodded, and Bob Baffert said, "We're even," and then he used a phrase to describe it, which we can't say on the radio.
Yeah, and believe me, Mike remembers everything, so trust me, believe that Mike remembered, because he does. He remembers everything. Tim Layden is my guest. What's it say about Mike as a jockey, Tim, and the work that he puts in, that where he was in 1998 was over there, and where he is right now in 2018? And I understand that he
Mike
still gets great rides.
Jim, Mike made a decision in 98 when he had severe broken vertebrae in the middle of his back, not his low back or his neck where you see this stuff, and he decided not to have surgery to put rods and plates and things in there because he wanted to make his body heal. And right around that same time, he went to the gym, and he's been in the gym for 20 years since. Doesn't lift a big weight, but, you know, 4 years ago I saw Mike Smith put up 220 pounds on a bench, and he weighed about 113 at the time. So you think about that, and he was 48 at the time. So just a phenomenal athlete, and at the same time, he's ridden so many races with so much money and prestige on the line that he's going to deliver a performance that the horse deserves. And that's what the trainer wants most. That's what the spectators want most, is a guy who can give the horse the best chance to win. And 99% of the time, that's what Mike does.
Big money, Mike. That's an amazing thing you just shared, that anecdote, that this guy can put up twice his body weight at age 48 is incredible. What about the draw, Tim? He gets the rail. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? And what's the weather look like?
Weather is going to be great. So this will be the first time we've seen this horse in a classic on a fast track. It's a heavier track. That's the way Belmont is. So yeah, the horse seems to love it. He's trained on it twice and seems to like it, but that's something to factor into your thinking. The post, I mean, it's not great. I mean, it's a mile and a half, so there's plenty of time to get out of trouble. But at the same time, if he doesn't break sharply, I think Baffert and Smith would both like him to get to the lead and just stay there and just gallop around like American Pharoah did. But, you know, there's other horses in here. There's some talk about Noble Indy, who doesn't really have a great shot, that might take on Justify early and try and take some starch out of him, so that another horse by the same trainer called Vino Rosso could possibly pick up the pieces at the end. So I think, you know, the key thing is he wants to get out of there and run, not get squeezed down by somebody on the first turn. You know, Bob told Mike Smith, I'm going to show him the videotape of Big Brown, who didn't break in his Belmont out of the one post. And, you know, I don't think that cost him the race, but it put him in a tough spot all the way around. So the key thing is Mike just needs to get out of there and avoid trouble. And if somebody wants to take a shot at him, he's either good enough to handle that or he isn't.
And that's what Mike is so good at, just keeping the horse out of trouble, putting him in the right place. And, Tim, finally, if you were to play this or bet this, would you bet the champ or would you bet against him?
I would bet the champ. But, you know, again, if you're a horse player, I think he's going to win, Jim. I just think watching him out here, he just looks spectacular. We don't really know until he gets to the quarter pole, and that's nobody knows. Baffert doesn't know. Smith doesn't know. Nobody knows. But I think he looks so good. And there really isn't that much in there that can beat him. Hofberg is a horse that ran in the Derby and got in trouble and finished strongly, but I don't think he's good enough to beat the best that Justify has. So I'm saying you play the champ, and then maybe you look for some exotics below it. Maybe you like to bet Gronkowski because you like his name. I think Hofberg is going to be the second choice. There's no money in that. Maybe Vino Rosso, who's the horse that won the Wood Memorial here in New York on a different track, but he might be coming at the end. So, you know, but you bet that $2 on Justify so you have the ticket that you can frame and, you know, put in your office next to a horse picture somewhere.
Exactly right. Last thought, Tim, you made this point, and it's a really, really important point, I think. It's going to be Justify's sixth race in 112 days, and these are not ordinary races either. How big of an ask is that of any horse?
Nobody thought that he would be able to get this far. But a lot of people thought he wouldn't win the Derby because he'd been rushed to the Derby in a short time in 77 days. So he's 5 weeks into uncharted territory already, Jim. So, you know, he's going to need a rest at some point. I think most people would have thought it would be by now. But he just has shown no signs of being tired yet. But if it happens, it shouldn't be a shock to anybody. But that's not what he's showing anybody. So he's going to wind up, if he wins a Triple Crown, he's going to do it having race started 4 months later than any other horse that did it. So it's pretty amazing.
And I don't care how recently it was done, Tim, you know this. If he does it again, that's an amazing accomplishment and should take nothing away from the fact that it was done just a few years earlier. Senior writer for SI, he also works for NBC Sports, and you've got the Belmont Stakes tomorrow. Tim, always love talking horse racing with you. Thank you very much and have a great weekend.
Thanks, Jim. You too.
Great job. Tim Layden. So do you bet the champ or do you bet against the champ? He's an amazing horse, but it's a really big ask. And that's a mile and a half. I'm not sure. I mean, he is a classy, classy athlete, equine athlete. But I'm not sure that he's got a mile and a half in him. We'll find out. But six races in that short a period of time is almost an impossible ask, especially races like that. Let me set up your third hour. Phone lines are open. Use them. We are going open phones next hour. I'm going to start the third hour with my thoughts on the Caps. All the way into hour number three without talking about the district getting its first world championship in years. The Capitals getting their first Stanley Cup ever. I'll start the top of the third with that. Also in hour number three, I've got to say goodbye to a valued member of the XR4TI. We're all getting a little bit dusty about that. You'll find out who it is. In fact, if you want to guess, go ahead and do it right now. Again, do not confuse who you want it to be with who it actually is. Then you've got the squatter. Come to find out, the squatter coached a 3-time Major League Baseball All-Star when he was younger. I mean, what else do we not know about you, squatter? Dear Jim, we decide when we win and when we lose, which is freaking never. When I get hyped, I take my shirt off. I take it. Oh, guys, can you give me a hand here? Shirt stuck on my head again. Signed, Coach Squat.
Hey, I like to get hyped for games. Right, get hyped.
Can you help me get my shirt over my big head? I'm trying to get hyped here. The legend of the squatter. Two of the seven demands are about him, and now I come to find out he once coached a reliever of the year. Mark Melancon tweeted it. It's true. Third hour is coming up. Do not go anywhere.